conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. If you need assistance during this call, please press star, then zero. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay, Brad.
Hey, well, good afternoon. Thank you, Bob. This is Brad Holen out in Kearney, Nebraska. And also joining, I think, Marv Crawford with Emera Fuels is on today. He's one of our technical people and will certainly be on the line as we get towards the end of the presentation if we want to talk more technical terms. But when we set up the date, I told Bob that I was fine with this date as long as I didn't wasn't required to give one more political commentary or one more political ad. I think we had our voting yesterday, and I'm sure everybody's ready to move on. So the objectives here today, kind of the who, what, when, where, and why, what I wanted to do is give you an understanding of where we see our marketplace and the marketplace we're operating in and the market opportunity we see for this engine, and then come back towards the latter part of the presentation to talk specifically about the engine and what we've done to fine-tune that engine to run on 100% ethanol. So we are Emera Fuels. We're a company out of Kearney, Nebraska, which if you're not familiar with the geography of Nebraska, we're pretty much right in the middle of the state. We have created industrial engines to run on 100% ethanol, and we'll talk about why we have done that and the opportunity we see. We've been operating these engines for the past 3 years commercially in the marketplace. We've probably been testing and working with ethanol engines for about the last 5 years to get to where we're at today. We've commercially been operating mainly in Nebraska and Kansas, but we'll look at why we feel there's opportunities beyond just the Midwest area. And also, we've done some things in the Mississippi Delta area that we'll talk about. And the reason we wanted to do this is to create a closed-loop energy system, which I'll touch on as well. And then at the end of the presentation, as I said before, we'll come back to the engine itself and some of the things we've done to optimize this engine running on 100% ethanol. So to start on slide number 3, if you're following along, you'll see a state of Nebraska, and what that represents is ethanol production taking place in the state of Nebraska and in the different sites throughout the state. We, as a state, if you want to move to the next slide, slide 4, are the second largest producers of ethanol in the United States. And a lot of those dots on the map that we were just looking at came about over the last 10 years. There were maybe 3 or 4 ethanol plants in production 10 years ago or prior to 10 years ago, and the rest of those have been built and really have developed an industry that now produces about 2 billion gallons of ethanol, just a little over 2 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol annually, and utilizes over 700 million bushels of corn, mainly corn, out of the state of Nebraska and the surrounding states. So we have created quite an industry, and it's worked well for the state of Nebraska, but something that we looked at early on as we became owners in the ethanol industry and as far as plants is concerned and so forth, we looked at, hey, it's great to produce this, and it's great to have some of that manufacturing capability here in Nebraska, but how much of this, how many of these gallons are we actually utilizing right here in the state? And the answer to that is about 97% of the gallons that we produce in Nebraska leave the state. They are railed right out to mainly the West Coast or out to the East Coast, and really, as you think about it, it's going to the population centers. Because the majority of ethanol today is utilized in automotive and in E10, and now with some of the new regulations that have been passed, E15 and then E85. So that's where the majority of that goes. And if you think about the state of Nebraska, it's a fairly good-sized state, but we don't have a lot of people. And driving on E10, the number of people that we have, we don't make a very big dent even in the amount of ethanol that we produce. Only about 3% of it is used that way. So we began to look at where can we utilize this fuel that we're growing in our state. If we don't have enough people to do it, driving on E10, where else can we utilize this fuel? And having an agriculture background, an agriculture base within our partnership, we looked at something we knew very well, and that was irrigation and irrigation engines. If you look at the next slide, it'd be slide number 6, we're looking at the number of acres of irrigated land across the country, and if you look in Nebraska and Kansas, you see that it becomes quite dense there in the area. And the biggest reason for that is we sit on the Ogallala Aquifer, which is the world's largest underground lake, if you will, and Nebraska sits on about 65% of that water, but it also reaches down into Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado. So it's a fairly large irrigation area, and certainly with a lot of irrigation taking place. In the state of Nebraska, we'll just stick to that state, there's 92,000 registered irrigation wells in the state. And so there's quite an opportunity with those wells for irrigation power units. And that's something we've worked with personally for several years, and is an area we thought that we could maybe convert over to burn on something other than diesel or even natural gas. So if you go to the next slide, slide number 7, what we were really looking to do is create a closed-loop energy system. And basically, the corn growers that have benefited by having now the ethanol plants and another market for their corn, they're able to realize that additional profit for their corn by selling to the ethanol plant. We realize the additional manufacturing ability then in the state. And then as we close the loop, we as AmeriFuels have then purchased the ethanol directly from the plants and delivered that ethanol back to the farmers who are burning 100% ethanol in their irrigation engines really to grow more corn. So that's what we call the closed-loop system, energy system, that you're basically growing your irrigation fuel to grow more corn. And doing that in a way that transportation costs, if you look at the trains that I had in the previous slide, the transportation costs are really cut down to a minimal amount of the input, just because most of this ethanol that we have hauled back to the or delivered back to the farmers doesn't have to travel more than 50, 60 miles at the most because of the distribution of ethanol plants that we have around the state. So that is the general idea that we are working on in the state of Nebraska to be able to utilize more of this fuel. And you say, well, really, what kind of dent can you make with irrigation engines? And if you remember, I mentioned that just in the state of Nebraska, we have 92,000 registered wells, and a good portion of those are running on either natural gas or diesel engines at this time. But to put it in terms that maybe you can grab onto a little bit easier, the automotive terms, if you look at slide number 8, and what I've done is just compared what happens when we convert one well, irrigation well, running for 3.5 to 4 months in a summer to ethanol. And if you're getting about 5 gallons an hour and you run that irrigation engine for about 1,000 hours in the season, that's 5,000 gallons. And what is 5,000 gallons? Well, it's the equivalent of 83 drivers driving on E10 for the entire year. If they're driving 15,000 miles in that year, that's how many gallons that they would use of ethanol. So what I'm getting to, I guess, is we convert one irrigation engine, it's like converting 83 drivers driving the entire year on E10. And so for the state of Nebraska, if you look at those 92,000 wells, and if we converted every one of those to ethanol, it's about 450 million gallons of ethanol that we would utilize, which is about 25% of our current production. So that's the kind of dent that it can make, and that's the opportunity that we see to create that closed-loop system and actually be self-sufficient with our own energy right there in the state of Nebraska. Now, I've talked a lot about Nebraska. That's what we're very familiar with, but there's certainly opportunities to do this very same thing in other states, not only with irrigation engines, but with industrial engines in general, whether they be a genset or, you know, you name the industrial engine and the application. There's opportunity to burn those engines, burn on ethanol at a very economical rate, which we'll get into a little bit later. Another area that we've been involved with, the Mississippi Delta area, if you look at slide number 9, what you are looking at is some sweet sorghum that they're developing in the Delta area as an energy crop. And they're in the midst of developing this project. And the dots that you see represented are the potential build-out of some micro ethanol refinery-type systems, production areas where they would produce up to 10 million gallons of ethanol based on the production of this sweet sorghum, and then turn around and use that hydrous ethanol to burn in irrigation fuel for the rest of the Delta. If you look at the next slide, slide 10, the Delta area is probably the most densely populated or densely populated area for irrigation. And you can see all the way from the Boot Hill of Missouri down into Mississippi and Arkansas, obviously, and Tennessee and Louisiana. So there's a lot of irrigation taking place there. And their thought process is how do we grow our own energy source as well? And our application is fit into their model perfectly in that they can create a closed-loop system. And for all the irrigation that they have going on in that area, can really utilize it the same way that we're doing it up in the corn ethanol area. Just a few more numbers if you go to slide 11 and their opportunity. They have not quite as many irrigation wells. If you look at slide 12, in the state of Arkansas, 41,000. Irrigation, Missouri 13,000, and Mississippi 12,000. And the majority of those are running on diesel. And the opportunity they see is to replace that diesel with ethanol. And just a couple things that are going on, and I'm sure this group is very familiar with the tier standards. The tier 4 standard for diesel is coming, and there's going to be some added expense for irrigation engines to meet those requirements, as it has been for natural gas and for ethanol as well. But we see a real opportunity to replace some of the diesel engines, which are going to be quite a bit more expensive, with an ethanol-burning engine in the future, you know, coming up in the next 5 to 10 years. And then also burning ethanol, a fuel that's produced right in the area versus shipping the diesel in. So that is kind of the business opportunity that we're looking at, and I've shown you a couple applications for that in irrigation. As I said, I think there are other industrial applications that can utilize ethanol away from the automotive market. I know a lot of time is spent with the automotive market and figuring out how we can utilize more of our renewable fuels in that marketplace, and a lot of political things. If you just look at the E10 and the E15 and what's taking place to get to the E15, there's just a lot of things to consider there. And I guess I would say on the industrial market, there maybe aren't as many hurdles to get over to get things done and to get applications in place to run on a renewable fuel such as ethanol. At least we haven't experienced the kind of hurdles that you would in the automotive market. I will switch gears a little bit. Now that we've looked at the market opportunity and what we're doing, well, I can certainly can talk in more detail specifically as to what we've done with our irrigation engines and in the marketplace, but I think I'll leave that for now, and then if there are questions, come back and address those questions specifically. If you switch down to slide, I believe, 14, we have some charts, some dyno charts of the testing of our engine at a lot of different RPMs and a lot of different loads. And you can see there from lowest load to top load just exactly what's going on with our engine. For those of you that have specific questions about that and have great interest in that, one thing I will point out on the torque, and I'll show you a chart here when we switch over to the PDF, we find out that we get more torque from our engine using ethanol as a fuel versus using natural gas or propane. The engine itself is a General Motors 8.1-liter industrial engine that we have modified and optimized to run on ethanol, and I'll tell you, the fueling system, we really created the entire fueling system to be compliant with ethanol as a fuel, and you know, so we had the confidence that corrosion or anything that may take place would not with this, because we've all used all ethanol compliant components to build this fueling system. So we've done that, but really the technology and the time and the magic, I guess, is actually in the box, and that's in the ECM, the controller, and what we've done there to be able to control the engine as far as running on 100% ethanol. That's really where we've spent a lot of time, and that's where our technology is at to make this run as efficiently as it can run. But that being said, the torque that we do get, it's more like a diesel type of torque than natural gas and propane. If you look at the horsepower, we feel very comfortable that at 1,800 RPM, our continuous horsepower, we're going to be around 100 to 185 and feel very comfortable running those engines at that level with that kind of load to create that kind of horsepower. The engine itself, the reason we chose the 8.1 liter GM engine is it's a well-accepted engine within the irrigation market. It's been there for a long time, plus it has a nice range that you can get up to that 185 horsepower requirement, but you can also run very efficiently around the 100 level as well and cover everything in between. We feel like with our engine, if you want to compare it to diesel and get down to economics, we in the applications we have out in the field, plus the testing will prove this out as well, we get about 12 to 13 horsepower per gallon of fuel. And your typical diesel that's in the field is going to get about 18 to 19. Some of the newer models may be a little bit better, but the typical irrigation engine you find in the field gets about 18 horsepower per gallon. And then it's just a matter economically of figuring out you have to be this percent less than diesel to be economical. And putting it in those terms, I know, are not the most technical terms, but that's how you can break it down, and farmers get that pretty quick, that for me to be economical against this diesel engine that I have out there, I have to be 70% or so of the price of diesel. And over the last 2 to 3 years, ethanol that we have purchased has been very economical and very competitive with the diesel engine. If you'll switch over to the PDF and go to the second page there, something I wanted to bring out. There's a chart there comparing ethanol, the same engine running on ethanol versus running on natural gas and propane. And if you'll see the chart on the top right-hand corner there, there's torque and there's horsepower. And you'll see that the torque curve is pretty, it's over 500 there, and it gets there fairly rapidly on ethanol and then stays right there. And then the horsepower getting to that 185 to 190 at 1,800 RPM. And you can see that it's above the propane and above the natural gas lines there and how it compares in the very same engine. So we did some testing at the University of Nebraska, tractor testing facility, where we took the very same engine and ran it on ethanol, did the testing, and then reconfigured the engine to run on propane to do some comparisons to see just exactly what it did give us, and that's what you're seeing here in the chart. I think at this time we can get into a lot more detail. I'm not sure what you're interested in as far as the detail of the engine. I think it might be good to open it up to questions, and we can just address the specific questions that you have.
Okay, Brad, thank you very much. So we'll open it for questions. I had one, Brad. You mentioned that you modified, of course, the hoses, maybe O-rings, gaskets, things like that. Did you do other modifications on the engine?
You know, the and you're right there. That those are some of the things. The fuel rail was the only thing. It was important to us to keep it as inexpensive as possible, so we tried to use as many off-the-shelf parts as we could, and we accomplished that in everything but the fuel rail. We did have the fuel rail specifically made for us, but everything else is off-the-shelf parts from GM or other well-known vendors. So does that answer your question, Bob?
Sure.
Brad, this is Miguel Romeo from Sherman Industries.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for sharing all this information on your engine, and yeah, I think this really gives corn growers and farmers an option to burn what they're growing. I had a few technical questions about your engine. I noticed that when you refer to 12 and a half horsepower hour per gallon of fuel for ethanol compared to 18 horsepower hour per gallon of diesel, the ratio between those is essentially the difference in lower heating value of the fuel. Then on slide 13 of your presentation, you have a chart where you talk about fuel opportunity as gallon of diesel and fuel opportunity as gallon of hydrous ethanol. And there's when I calculate the difference between those two, I get a different ratio, you know, different from the lower heating value. So is that because there are some efficiency gains that you realize with your engine, or why is it, why does the same difference in lower heating value not apply there?
On which slide was it again?
Slide 13.
Slide 13.
It would be a chart where you basically convert all of the irrigation needs of the Mid-South Delta into fuel opportunity as gallon of diesel.
Okay.
And
yep.
Then your last column is fuel opportunity as gallon of hydrous ethanol.
Yep.
And the difference between 73 million and 61 million gallons, of course, is less than the lower heating value difference. So does your engine provide some efficiency gains that makes up for that heating value difference?
Well, that's a good point. The slide that you're referring to is one that the Mid-South group that we worked with, they put together. So I have to say I should have checked it, but it's not actually my slide. But that's one that they put together to try to determine the opportunity for them down in that area. I would say the first is right. I mean, we're comfortable with the 12 to 13, depending on which application we put it in, horsepower per gallon. And we think there are some efficiencies to gain from the engine, and we know one thing. We're just basically working with a stock engine, which this 8.1 is a 9.1-to-1 compression ratio. And we do feel like to better utilize the fuel, we could bring that compression ratio up to gain some more efficiencies, specifically from the mechanics of the engine, if we brought it up to 12 to 13, and we're actually doing some work there. And there's others that certainly have done that work to get some additional efficiency out of ethanol. But our engine right now, with all the applications we put it on, we feel pretty comfortable that we're going to get about 12 horsepower per gallon, 12 to 13, if that answers your question. And I apologize if the that slide is not equal to what I've stated here.
Yeah, it'd just be interesting to know what the basis for their gallons of diesel to gallons of ethanol was.
And I don't think they got into that in great detail. I think it's maybe just a little bit of an error on their part. They were just trying to measure based on their irrigation down there and what's gone on, what the equivalent would be in ethanol, just to get an opportunity number.
Okay.
More than a scientific breakdown of this is exactly how it does.
No. Okay, thanks.
Yep. This is Todd Whiting at Deere. Just a kind of a small curiosity question. On slide 8, you talk about using 5 gallons per hour for a well, but in your chart on engine fuel consumption, that would be an extremely low load. So
yep.
this engine burns 5 gallons an hour at almost idle,
yep.
like at 2,200 RPM. So this must be some disconnect there.
Well, not so much a disconnect, Todd, but just using conservative numbers. When I put the slide together, the point of the slide is, again, an opportunity slide that... To compare, the real thing is how many gallons that an engine just burning for 3 or 4 months actually goes through versus an automobile. And you're exactly right. Our typical engine out there is going to be more like 8 or 9 gallons. But for simple math and just as for simplicity and to be fairly conservative with the 5 gallons, that's what we've used. Again, not so much a scientific approach to what's there, but more of a just a conservative estimate of, okay, here's the opportunity as compared to automotive.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Yep, but you're right. The most of our engines would be burning anywhere 8, 9, 10 gallons an hour, and we have ranges from 70 horsepower required to clear up to that 180, and everything in between. Of the ones that we have out there. The other thing that we found in applications, the different gearheads that you come into contact with, and gearheads, if you're not familiar with irrigation, that's the actual pump that's pulling the water out of the ground, and at what speed. There's different ratios, meaning what speed does that engine need to run to produce the 800,000 gallons of water coming out of the ground. And there's a lot of different variables to that. But we have found that this engine is particularly good at producing a lot of torque at a lower RPM, and if we can create a ratio, gearhead ratio, that allows it to do that, then we've found some fuel savings in being able to do that as well. But not every application we run into has that, and there's some expense to changing out gearheads, about $1,000 a piece, to make it fit perfectly to create as much efficiency as you possibly can with that engine.
Brent, this is Bob again. I had another question. Cold start, do you have any special things you do to start these engines up when it's cold out?
Yeah, and with ethanol, that especially with 100% ethanol, that certainly is a concern. And Marv, if you're on, we feel like about 55 degrees, you get to that level, and you may have a little bit of difficulty getting it started at that point. Marv, I don't know if you had any more you wanted to talk about there.
No, I think that 50 degrees is a temperature. You get below that, they are very hard starting. I think that's why you see E85 out there, is that little bit of gasoline will aid that starting. And so in the automotive market, that's why you're seeing that.
We, with an irrigation application, most of the time you're not going to run into a 50 degree day until you get to this time of year where it's harvest and you want to start up and move a pivot. Then you may have a little time starting the actual engine if you're going to need to do that to move a pivot. Otherwise, during the summer, 50 degrees is typically not a problem.
Right. Thanks.
One other thing I might say, as we started this endeavor, the first thing from farmers that they had asked once they figured out that, hey, this makes economic sense, I like the idea of burning something that I've produced myself, is how do I get 100% ethanol? This ethanol is coming directly from the ethanol plant and is picked up there and delivered, and not just everybody can pull in with their tank wagon and fill it up. There's certainly specifications that need to be met, and so we set up to do that. We're a licensed distributor in Kansas and Nebraska, and we supply the ethanol to the producer, so that actually has not been a problem, but certainly it was a concern, and it always is a concern when the farmer is looking at this opportunity as to how will I receive the fuel, or how does that part of it happen.
Brad, this is Miguel Romeo from Sermon Industries again. In this closed-loop energy model, what is the price per gallon of ethanol, you know, when you don't have to deliver it by freight, and, you know, if you're only going 50 to 60 miles average to your local farmer, what is the price per gallon of that ethanol?
You know, the ethanol price is, as an example, this summer, probably the average of what we paid was around $1.70 to $1.72. Mm-hmm. The previous year, I bought almost all of our ethanol right around the $1.50 to $1.55 range.
Okay.
And that's going to go, you know, that's the market. It's going to go with the market since this summer. If you follow ethanol, we're about $2.35 today. So you've got a completely different price, and not different than diesel, not different than natural gas or electricity for that matter. But the transportation cost on that, we figure it costs us probably about 10 cents to 15 cents a gallon to get it delivered right to the engine from the plant. And so you can compare that to say, okay, did that ethanol plant make some additional dollars by selling it to us for $1.72 and not having to put it on a rail and ship it off to Atlanta or L.A. or wherever that would go. And we know there's some cost savings that we're probably realizing a little bit of that, and the ethanol plant is probably recognizing a little bit of that, too, if they can sell to a local market versus the transportation cost of going to the coast.
Okay.
Does that get to your question?
Yeah, I was trying to understand the economics of, you know, when you're burning 18, when you're getting 18 horsepower hour per gallon versus the 12 and a half, you know, how do the economics compare? I think farm diesel, last time I looked, was maybe $2.10 per gallon. I don't know if anyone has a more recent number.
Yeah, this summer, on average, farm diesel delivered to the field, and so you compare apples to apples delivered to the field, was around $2.40 to $2.55. And there are certainly ways to, if you take tanker loads and bring it all in, 8,000 gallons at a time, you certainly can save some money there. But just to do an apples to apples, that's about where we were. So we were competitive, but kind of right on the edge of being competitive there with diesel.
Okay.
Now, if we back up 3 years ago when we had diesel at $4.50 a gallon, and the ethanol was $2.30, $2.40, then you can see clearly the economics of running ethanol was saving quite a bit of money.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's just the market, and the market, some years you are going to be the most economical and some years you're not. Every one of these energy sources has been the most expensive and been the least expensive. Natural gas right now is by far the least expensive in irrigation.
And we did see some of that 210 diesel sold in January last year, but at the same time we saw 130 ethanol being sold.
Okay. Well, one more question related to this, to the economics of this. Have you established any sort of a metric for, you know, what one of your customers would pay for a reduction in fuel consumption? In other words, if you were able to go, you know, using your numbers, if you were able to go from 12 or 13 up to 14 horsepower hour per gallon, do you have any idea of what that's worth to the market?
a very good question. I mean, we've focused on, hey, we're economical here. Yeah, if we can make a jump to 14, which is kind of the focus of some testing we're doing, you know, that just really makes us competitive. And we haven't done a metric per se to measure that, but that certainly in the background of our minds that we know that if we can accomplish that, that opens us up to a much wider market as far as being competitive. The other thing that's happening is the diesel, the actual capital expense of a diesel engine is going to change here over the next couple of years. And so that consideration comes into play then for a potential customer that's saying, well, do I go with a diesel engine? Do I go with an ethanol engine, natural gas engine, whatever? And those economics are weighed out over both a capital expense and then what do I feel like the energy source is going to cost me over the next 10 years of the life of this engine. But we haven't applied a metric to it as to what additional business we could realize. We know it would be a positive.
I'm sorry, Brad. This is Bob again. You probably answered it before, but did you say that your engine will meet the Tier 4 regs?
Yeah, the engines we have out there, all the engines we have out there were pre-July 2008, so that pre the Tier 4 regs. I will say that we have engines that we have done all the work with the EPA to hit the Tier 4 standard, except the final testing that needs to be done. And when I say all the work, I mean we've developed the testing protocol with them. When we first came to them about a year and a half ago, we were the first in line as to ever ask them about a stationary engine running on 100% ethanol and what criteria or what regs we would need to meet. So the first round of discussions was just to even figure out just exactly what we needed to do for certification of this engine. And that's the part that we've done the work that we feel like we know what that testing and certification process will be. And we're right at the point to go ahead and do that. I will say the reason we haven't gone forward with it, the 8.1 liter GM quit making that engine a year ago. And so you look at the platform and say, okay, is that the platform that we want to go forward with and do the emissions testing on? Because each new platform requires that Tier 4 testing. So we're weighing whether to go ahead with that for the few engines that we have, or do we go ahead with that with our new platform that we'll introduce later. And that's a very long answer. Hopefully I've answered your question there.
Yep, thanks.
It's Todd Whiting again. You mentioned, I think, once or twice you happened to use the word hydrous ethanol, but as I understand it, there's not much water at all in normal ethanol produced in the U.S. Is that true, or did you?
Yep, that's a good pickup, Todd. I bounce back and forth between hydrous and anhydrous ethanol, and what we're using is the 200 proof and hydrous ethanol coming out of the corn ethanol plants where they take that final step and dry it out. The hydrous ethanol, which the engine runs on as well, is the situation down in the Delta with those micro facilities. They're not wanting to spend the extra money for the equipment, first of all, to do that extra drying step to go to anhydrous ethanol. And if they can get by without doing that and utilize the fuel within our engine, then there's a cost savings, substantial cost savings, capital costs, and then the extra step of doing that. So that's where the hydrous ethanol, the engine runs fine on that. A little more water left in the fuel, but we're fine with that. But everything we've done so far commercially has been with the 200 proof anhydrous out of the corn ethanol plants.
Okay, thanks.
Brad, this is Miguel again. In going forward, how important do you think it is for an ethanol engine in an irrigation application to remain compatible with existing fuels such as gasoline or diesel?
For the engine itself to remain compatible with it?
Yeah, I mean, just from a customer acceptance standpoint,
mm-hmm.
would someone buy an ethanol-only engine?
Well, yeah, we've sold them, so I know people will buy them. But it's a good question in that, okay, this is kind of new, this is something different, and we certainly have those that stuck their toe in the water and said, well, I don't know if that's something that, you know, I'll maybe wait until a few other people try it. But we have sold the engines. They've ran fine for 3 years. But one thing we have done a lot of work with in the last year that you might find interesting is to give the farmer an option to run on more than one fuel. And we set up an engine a year ago, a little over a year ago now, to run on natural gas and ethanol. And either to run 100% natural gas or 100% ethanol or a combination of the two. And I'll tell you the reason why we set this up is that there's some Kansas farmers down in the area where they have some oil wells and gas wells, and they have what they call wellhead gas, which is a very cheap form of natural gas that's coming off those wells. So over the years, they have developed their own little pipelines from their from those wells and utilized that as fuel for their irrigation. And in several cases, they get into July and August, they don't have enough gas pressure to actually run the engine. So they come back to their fields in the middle of the afternoon in July and find the engine is shut off. Well, can't figure out why. There's good gas pressure, but the variability of that gas pressure has created variability in the ability for that engine to run. So all that explanation to say this, we set up an engine that one of our engines that sensed the gas pressure and ran on the wellhead gas as much as it could, and then when the pressure started to go down, it automatically sensed that and supplements it with ethanol. So the farmer could return, the engine's running, could be on 80% ethanol and 20% natural gas, or the reverse. He wouldn't know, but it allowed him to use all the wellhead gas he could use and use ethanol to supplement it. So that, we took care of a problem that way, but we also thought, you know, I think farmers would like the option to have two fuels and be able to use whichever one is most economical. So we set up a kit to do that, and I think we probably put 30 of those out in the field this year where we have a dual fuel situation, and they can run on natural gas and ethanol at the same time. The nice thing about running a little bit of ethanol, as I said earlier, natural gas is by far the least expensive right now, but we've added in about a 80-20 mix and had some ethanol in there for the extra torque, and then also the cooling effect that ethanol has versus natural gas. And again, a long answer for something that we have done to give them a choice of fuels.
Would you say that the preferred, if you were to pick two fuels as the preferred fuels for farmers in a dual fuel engine, would you say that that's natural gas and ethanol?
Well, I would say that as we are right now, farmers certainly like diesel engines and the
okay.
way that diesel engines have performed. But they're not going to like what's coming around the corner. As far as the price point for that. I think we've made a lot of improvements in natural gas engines or spark-ignited engines, if you will, and the dependability and durability of those engines probably over the last 10 years. So I think that gap has been narrowed considerably.
Right.
And again, when we have a different price point for diesel, I think you'll see spark-ignited engines probably take a little bit more market share.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions, folks? Okay, well, then I'd like to again thank Brad for the presentation and let everyone know that at this point it looks like we're going to have our next teleseminar is going to be on November 30th. That's a Tuesday. And it will be, we think, by Matt Brewster of the EPA about his work on ethanol as a fuel in engines. So thank you very much for your participation, and have a great Thanksgiving holiday.
All right. Thank you very much.